Thank you for listening to the Faith Radio Mornings podcast. Enjoy the conversation.
Start your day connecting faith to life with Faith Radio Mornings.
Let it rise.
Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. Bill Arnold today sitting in for Bill Arnold. We're hoping, Rebecca Maxwell, Paul Perot, and myself, that you had a great weekend. I hope you had a good night's sleep as well, because you know that sleep is the new status symbol. Bad sleep weakens the immune system, impairs learning and memory, and qualifies you to be a morning radio talk show host. But you know the last two presidents, I think that would be President Clinton and President Obama, they slept very little, and that was a sign of their prowess. George W. Bush slept 9 hours a night and took a nap. And they say that Army soldiers, sleep is a pillar of performance. So make sure you're getting good sleep. It's the new status symbol. Weather-wise, it looks like it's another day of completely normal weather. That's because God controls it. And if you follow the news this weekend, you should be exhausted. Let's face it, we're just mere mortals. We will process some of it, though, and hopefully do that through a Christian lens. I want to start the day with a passage from Romans chapter 5. It says, "You see, at just the right time, when we were still powerless, Christ died for the ungodly. Very rarely will anyone die for a righteous person, though for a good person, someone might possibly dare to die. But God demonstrates his own love for us in this: while we were still sinners, Christ died for us." God said, "Let there be light," and he's calling life to order this morning. So get started, get your day going. We're going to see sunrise in the upper Midwest at about 6:37. If you're out in Hartford this morning, good morning. You've already got that sunshine, so we are already a little jealous. But I'm going to bring up my first guest who agreed to speak to me only on the condition of anonymity, and his name, of course, is Patrick Albanese. So we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we're going to do the Headline Hunters news over the weekend. We're going to process it for you, and we'll be back in a minute. It is 6 minutes after the hour. Good morning and happy Monday. Good morning. It's 7 minutes after the hour. So glad you're with us today. Welcome to your Faith Radio family. Nice to be part of a family. You're always welcome here. We love you. And I just want to say thank you for all the support you gave us last week during Spring Share. That was awesome. People really stepped up and made a difference. And it was a wonderful 3 days. And it was really, really amazing to see the numbers roll in and the support that came in. And you made all the difference. So thank you. Monday mornings, I always like to talk to my friend Patrick Albanese from West Des Moines. And we like to figure out what happened over the weekend. And there's lots to talk about this morning. Patrick, hi, how are you?
Good morning. I do appreciate you giving me anonymity this morning. Well, as I understand it, we'll be doing this live, but my portion will be edited out.
Exactly. That's exactly
okay.
Right.
Perfect. Oh, that's good.
Let's
that's
start
good.
With just talking about the Neil Gorsuch confirmation and then the way in which it happened with the nuclear option. That was
yes.
Interesting.
Is if
that going to... Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to say, if you rearrange those letters, it's unclear. So I find that interesting.
Is that going to cost Republicans down the road using the nuclear option?
It might. I mean, it cost the Democrats down the road when they did it in 2013. And people warned them 4 years ago, you do this and it'll come back to haunt you. And it did. And now they're saying the same things. And it very well could. But I really don't see that they had an option. I mean, this was some high stakes political gamesmanship being played by both sides. And Chuck Schumer was taking a mighty amazing risk by going for the filibuster on a kind of an unfilibusterer type guy. Mm-hmm. Of course, you're going, he's pretty safe bet. He's filling the Scalia seat.
Mm-hmm.
I even hate to say that, it's like, it's not Scalia's seat, it's our seat. But
of course,
I thought, if the Republicans were to cave to this, then that means that Chuck Schumer calls all the shots on the court, that, the minority would be able to say, until you give us somebody that we like, you're not getting anybody. And then that means that they'd have to start as the majority nominating very liberal justices, and I just don't think that's what people voted for. So I don't think the Republicans had a choice. It's like if he filibusters, if we let them pull this off, and we can't get Neil Gorsuch on, we certainly can't get anybody that would be to the right of Gorsuch, and we're going to have to go to the left, and we're supposed to be the conservative party.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Now, in your research, you found something very interesting that Tim Kaine said, and bring that up because I found that to be fascinating.
Well, now you got to be pretty old, you know, to remember stuff like this, because this happened way, oh gosh, I'm thinking October.
Yeah, you got to be an old guy to remember this one.
But this was when, you know, this is the end of October, and they were pretty darn certain that, you know, Hillary had the election kind of sewn up, and it was just really a matter of where to hang the drapes. And Tim Kaine said, essentially, if we win the Senate, because they thought they had a chance, they were laying out all the game plans for if we can get 51 seats, he said, for sure we'll go nuclear. If they try to filibuster, any one of our appointees will go nuclear. Chuck Schumer was asked about that. He said, gosh, yeah, that option's on the table. I'm not going to rule it out. I'm not going to say for sure one way or the other. But my question to even some of my conservative friends that were all upset about this, I said, do you have any doubt that if Hillary had won and they had gained 51 seats in the Senate, and we know that the Democrats have a gift for solidarity, do you have any doubts that they would have gone nuclear for some really, really extremely liberal justices? Do you have any doubts? That's why we're where we're at.
Yeah. What would your liberal friends have answered that? How would they have answered that?
My liberal friends would have said, well, we would have deserved it. Elections have consequences.
Oh,
hang
sure.
on a second. Is this microphone on?
It is on.
Yeah, because I, you know, it's and I'm not saying that both sides or all of us don't do this, but it seems like, you know, when your party's in power, you kind of look the other way. And I remember when we had wiretapping stories when George Bush was president, and people said this is an outrage that people are they're listening in. The NSA is listening in. They have, you know, they have my not only my emails and my phone calls, but they actually have that really unique offer from Publishers Clearinghouse, and I want that back.
Mm-hmm.
And then Obama does it, and Obama does more drone strikes, you know, without due process than anybody, and they look the other way. And then now it's, I guess, our turn to start looking the other way and saying, huh, I don't know if there's anything to see here. Are people telling the truth? Are people telling lies? I really don't know, but my party's in power, so I guess I don't care.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That upsets me.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the blast that happened in Egypt with the church terrorist attack. It seems that these thugs, they seem to use their mullahs to justify their barbaric acts. And they do love anything sacred. They're obsessed with signs and symbols, and they like to strike on anniversaries and hit places of significance. So
Palm Sunday.
Yeah. Palm Sunday. There you go. And so 46 people died in that terrible attack. And, of course, they're taking responsibility for it. And why not? Because that's their business.
Yeah, that's their business. And they want to make you afraid to go to church, even on some of the most sacred of days. And, you know, I saw some people kind of speculating. They go, gee, you know, Palm Sunday, why not Easter Sunday? And I thought, well, because if you know anything about the Christian church, the most visited day, especially for newcomers to church, is Easter Sunday. And, you know, why not send up a warning a week before? Be afraid to go to church. Be afraid to go to church next week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole thing is barbaric, and it's a little upsetting, more than that some of the news media doesn't seem to be all that interested in covering this. You know, we had another truck terrorist attack last week, and I don't get it. It's like, folks, this is news. This is serious stuff, and it has serious implications, and you want to bring more of this to this country, and it's failing everywhere it exists. We need to really address this issue.
Mm-hmm. Now, St. George's Church, which was attacked, even the name George does mean something, even in the Middle East. St. George now is a saint, of course, not just in Christendom, but also in Islam. Did you know that?
You know, I did not know that.
Yeah, well, this is why you come to the morning show, for information like this.
Well, okay. I did it for the coffee, which, by the way, has yet to arrive.
Well, I did mean to send you some. But it is interesting the way they are always trying to attack anything sacred. They love anniversaries. And I just think that this Holy Week, they are trying to put instill in the minds of every Christian this fear that their attacks could be imminent. And the truth is, with lone wolves in the U.S., I would say, of course, anything can happen.
Anything can happen. And I'm if people are not aware yet that there is a real war going on in the world, you know, not just against, you know, freedoms in the United States, but that it is actually a war against Christianity.
It is. Yeah. Yep.
Then we need to wake up.
Yeah.
We need to wake up. And I don't like to say that to people at 6 o'clock in the
morning. It's actually kind of rude, isn't it?
And I know it's kind of tough because you say, well, how do I go about my day, you know, being all woken up about this? What do I do? And you know, a lot of it starts at home. I went to church last night and the pastor kind of boiled down to this simple message of, look, some of this stuff we overcomplicate, but we do have to start with love. We do have to start with that, you know, and some of that can just boil down to the love and the neighbor thing, which right there. You know, what was that? Was that the Chesterton thing? Is, you know, love your enemies and love your neighbors. And the problem is they're usually the same person.
Yeah, Patrick, we're going to take a little break when we come back. Lots more with Patrick Albanese. Welcome to your Monday. We hope you are starting it off with us. Thank you for doing that. 16 minutes after the hour, we'll be right back.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Do? Why, if I had a brain, I could
while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. And my head, I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching if I only had a brain.
And that is the soundtrack to my guest, Patrick Albanese from West Des Moines. Patrick, you have to grow in love with to your neighbor, don't you? We have to figure out ways to love our neighbor better. That's part of what we were talking about right before we went to break. That's mm-hmm. not an easy thing.
Well, it is with my neighbor because he comes over and he replaces my sump pump for me.
That's so nice. He's actually very useful, isn't he?
It is fantastic, yeah.
Yeah. One of the things I wanted to talk about this morning, and we talked about this a little bit over the weekend, was if we can't embrace the small truths in life, then we're going to have a big difficulty embracing the bigger truths in life. And
sure,
I know this is
obvious. Truths. Yeah, when somebody says, you know, if somebody points to, you know, the beach ball that is red and says, now that's blue, you say, well, okay, we're going to have a problem with some bigger truths here. We're going to have some problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one of the stories that caught both of our attentions over the weekend was the U.S. women's national soccer team, considered to be the best in the world.
Yeah.
Champions of the 2015 World Cup and winners of multiple Olympic gold medals. They played a bunch of 15-year-old boys from Dallas and lost.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm sure it was all a ton of fun. I don't know if the women's team let these guys win. I'm not sure. You know, I know what 15-year-old boys are like. They're pretty competitive.
They're very competitive. I know the women's team were working on chemistry and pitch alignment and strategy and all that. They weren't necessarily focused on results. But still, a three-goal victory by a bunch of teenage boys is a kind of a big deal.
Over an Olympic team.
But I know it's confusing. It's not confusing, but it's we look at the confusion we have over gender issues today. And, you know, we are created equal in God's eyes. And, of course, we're all but God created us differently. We have differences.
Yeah. He, you know, not just each individual, but he obviously, you know, said there are male, I'll create men and I'll create women, and there will be some inherent differences, and there will be strengths and weaknesses, if you want to call them that, or just differences. But I think the thing that upset us both about this is that you read a story like that, and then you cringe a little bit because you say, gosh, this is going to upset some people. Because, you know, there probably will be some guys going, that's right, I told you men are just, they're better at soccer, which may or may not be the case, you know. But the reality is we read a lot of these stories about the girl who's transitioning to be a boy who gets on the wrestling team, is getting testosterone shots, and then subsequently eliminates everybody basically with an arm tied behind her back and his back. I'm sorry. And then we read about the guy transitioning into a woman who then enters a weightlifting contest and is besting people in the deadlift by 60, 70, 80 pounds, a substantial amount. And my problem with the lying is that we're not supposed to believe that there are differences between the genders and that getting testosterone in a girl is going to give her a physical advantage. And you see these experts that are interviewed and they have to say, yeah, I don't think that gave her an advantage. I don't think there's anything to it. And the inside of your head has that cognitive dissonance where you say, that can't be true. That just can't be true.
Yeah.
I believe you are lying to yourself first and you're trying to make me believe it, which that's usually safe for inside the family. You know, when you're talking to your kids, you're going, no, really, kids, I did do that when I was your age. I swear I did, you know. We try to make people believe things, but now this lying, I go, how are you supposed to spread the truth of Jesus Christ when people are saying, you know, let me tell you what the truth is. And it's something that is not, that is obviously not. It gets upsetting. And so we see that story and you go, well, of course, 15-year-old boys at soccer with, you know, they're 15. They've got hormones raging. They have – you and I – you know, we're older guys now, but we remember when we were younger, you could go into a weight room and you picked up something, you know, heavy and you just moved it. And somebody said, you realize that you just deadlifted a world record. You said, oh, did I do that? It was in my way.
Right, right.
That's what it's like when you're 15. You're very strong.
Yeah. you're strong, you're passionate, and you can, you see no obstacle that can be in your way. Now, it's great that they were able to be competitive and they had fun and they came out with a winning result and it was kind of fun. But again, the point is, and that we're trying to make, is even this small truth, we as guys would be reluctant to share this story, except like now on the radio.
Except, well, because we're in a very safe place. Both of us are behind bulletproof glass. No, but it's true, because I do know that I have some friends that if you were to bring up this topic, they would either start making the excuses, but you couldn't state the obvious truth that it turns out, unbeknownst to us mere humans that have been on the planet for quite some time, men tend to be physically stronger than women, and ergo in some sporting events will probably do a better job. We're not – you have to almost hold back from saying something that seems obvious.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to put a bunch of caveats in. Like now, of course, I'm not talking about all cases. There will always be the exception to the rule, which why should we even have to say stuff like that? It's like, of course, we all know these things.
Mm-hmm.
But if we can't talk about the obvious, if this is something you say, well, you couldn't talk about the story at the water cooler at work because somebody might be offended. We have bigger issues to deal with. How are we going to get to spreading really good, wholesome? You know, it's Palm Sunday yesterday. We've got Easter Sunday coming up. These are the days where you really want to spread the good word. You say, but first, we can't even talk about the obvious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. Now, we've just got about a minute left, and in Egg Lake, Canada, someone wanted better reception. Canadian police says someone stole a cell phone tower. The Mounties in Manitoba report someone loaded the 68-foot tower onto a trailer last weekend and drove off with it. The suspects are reportedly driving a red Dodge pickup.
Yeah, now let's not forget to mention that was a 68-foot tall tower. So, of course, there are a couple of questions that beg to be answered. One is, was that the Dodge 3500 or was it the Hemi? Because
it had to have been the Hemi.
It had to be the Hemi because you got a Dodge truck that can pull away a 68-foot tower. I'm very interested in that payload.
Yeah, I love the fact that they described the vehicle.
We can describe the tower. It's like, you know, if you happen to see a red pickup truck driving down the freeway with a 68-foot cell phone tower in it, now who's going to complain? Because as they're driving next to that car, they're saying, I have never had better reception.
I know.
Whatever is on the back of that truck really is helping.
That's the way I like to start my Monday, with a little levity. Thanks so much, Patrick, for being on the show, and I will keep your anonymity in place.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. All right. It's 26 minutes after the hour. We will take a very short break and be back. Coming up after the news, Adam Carrington from Hillsdale College, who's feeling a little bit under the weather, but he still says, I'll come on and do the show. Be back in a minute. Good morning, everyone. You are welcome here as family. It's 30 minutes after the hour. We're going to take a little breather with news. And then when we come back, Adam Carrington from Hillsdale College, a professor in politics. We're going to talk about the latest on Syria and Neil Gorsuch confirmation and some of the fallout that has happened in the Senate. So stay tuned. Be right back. It is 34 minutes after the hour. It can be difficult for Christians to live out their faith in the workplace. Dr. Bill Peel is the director of the Center for Faith and Work. He clarifies what effective evangelism looks like specifically at work.
One of the first things that you need to realize is that evangelism is a process and not an event. And actually confusing that can get you into serious trouble, because evangelism sometimes doesn't stop to think about what God is doing in the other person's life. Sometimes we're a little more interested in getting the message out, and that actually can be quite inappropriate in the workplace. And 1 Peter 3:15 gives us some real important insights in there. Leading up to that verse, it's a wonderful verse that's quoted often by evangelists, that we're to always be prepared to give a reason for the hope that's within us. But leading up to that passage is a whole lifestyle that actually attracts people's attention to our faith. And then in verse 15, the part that I didn't quote there was that we're supposed to give a reason for the hope within us when asked. And so the first part of sharing your faith in the workplace is living your faith out in front of people, such that it actually makes our faith in Jesus Christ apparent and transparent to people. It begins with the quality of our work. It issues forth in the character of our life, of Christ's likeness, and then in real compassion for people before we begin to talk wisely about our faith. And so that's how it really starts.
For that full interview from Dr. Peel, you can go to our website at myfaithradio.com. Next up, Adam Carrington. Be back in a minute.
So what is social justice? Or perhaps a better question is, what has it become? This is Jim Garlow. Social justice was at one point a good phrase used over 100 years ago by scholars to describe dealing with some of the inequities in our culture. But over time, the word has become co-opted to become a tool, a manipulating tool, I would contend, for socialism. It's where we take from those who are successful and steal their goods and give to those who are not. That's called theft. Now, the Bible does advocate biblical justice. What is biblical justice? That's where we care for the poor. That's where we care for the disenfranchised, the downtrodden, the widow, the orphan. Social justice? No, it's not a good word anymore, tragically. Biblical justice? Yes. And we believe in that. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
Good morning. It's 37 minutes after the hour. Bill Arnold here. You know, I tried to follow the news this weekend, but I was distracted by my Minnesota Twins who were winning. So I did have to go back and review some of the events that went on over the weekend. And frankly, it left me exhausted. Because I am just a mere mortal. So I figured, well, but I've got Adam Carrington to speak to on Monday, which will save me. And Dr. Carrington, I understand you could probably use a little bit of doctoring yourself this morning.
Yeah, fighting the very end of a flu. Although I also had the good fortune of watching my Cincinnati Reds get off to a good start this past week. So I'd rather have been doing that than nursing the flu. But.
So basically, we're both in a good mood this morning.
Yes. I will take a 2 out of 3 against St. Louis anytime. That's what happened this weekend for Cincinnati. So
absolutely the truth. Well, I want to talk a little bit about this strike that's going on the in Syria, and just the response to it.
Sure.
Where do we start?
Yeah. Where I guess the place to start is that what precipitated it, that this long-running civil war, which to really untangle all of the mess of it within Syria could take the rest of the show. There's so many layers to it now. But the short of it is that Assad, who is the head of the the government of Syria basically used chemical weapons against some of the civilians and military of those who are trying to overthrow him.
Mm-hmm.
And in response to it, President Trump actually ordered a missile strike, 59 Tomahawk missiles that were aimed at the site from which they sent these chemical weapons. Anyway, it's caused all sorts of fallout. And the interesting thing in American politics is, first, what does this mean for our role in the Middle East? President Trump, as a candidate, pushed really hard to say that a failure of both parties was to be too involved in other countries' affairs, too willing to militarily go in and cost American lives when there wasn't a clear, narrow American interest. And so you've got, you know, a lot of people who are critical of him because they wanted a more interventionist foreign policy, now praising him. You've got a number of people who have been very supportive of him, now leery, wary, worried. And so there's a question of what comes after this. Does this signal Trump becoming more of a hawk, more of a neoconservative, or is this just a one-off? And I think those are the big political questions going forward, is what does this say about Trump's foreign policy, and what will that do to his the people supporting him and not supporting him going forward?
Mm-hmm. Adam, that was a great explanation. Now, do I have this right? Was it Russia's job to remove all the chemical weapons from Syria?
There was an agreement whereby President Obama trying to work unilaterally. The idea was they would work with the Russians and also to make sure that happened. And it was also, I think, in the background of this was the deals that were being struck over Iran. And that's where there's been some criticism of Russia. When Russia and the United States both seem to say that these weapons were no longer in Syria and no longer could be used, lo and behold, we've got these horrific pictures, which many people saw, of innocent civilians being gassed.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the one that really drove, I think, coverage was that horrific picture of the father holding his twin mm-hmm. young sons who had both been killed in the attack. So this was certainly a failure to follow through on previous diplomacy under the Obama administration. And I think that's one thing the Trump administration has tried to emphasize.
Mm-hmm. So when we look at Russia, were they incompetent? Was Assad playing them? What was going on there?
Well, that requires knowing a lot of things I don't know about the internal workings between
sure.
them, but I would doubt. I think that Russia, among its weaknesses, not following through on what it's doing is not one of them. I think that this probably shows that they didn't believe that they would face any consequences if they propped up Assad, who I think it was more in their interest to have win the civil war in Syria than the rebels. And they didn't really believe that the Obama administration would do much to push back if it came out that they hadn't really held up their bargain.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think this is incompetence. I think this is, in many ways, not respecting the previous administration's muscle or willingness to stand up for itself.
Mm-hmm. Is now President Putin is now saying that he will threaten the West with war. And he's warning President Trump that he's willing to take action. What do you think about that?
Excuse me. We're going to see, because in many ways this is not the Russia of the 1970s and 80s,
mm-hmm.
Where a lot of its power is in, you know, would it use nuclear weapons? Would the Red Army march across Europe? Putin has been very, I think, perceptive of how Russia can regain international power, and it's more through playing powers off of each other. It's more through a lot of the sabotage or interference with intelligence, hacking into you know, the CIA or hacking into equivalent agencies in other countries, you know, dipping their hands into elections, which to whatever extent they did it in the United States, they've definitely done it in other countries. And so I would be really surprised if Putin went through with actual military action, more because of that's just not playing to the strength that I think he's had. I think disruption of the international order through other means has been where he's been much more effective. So I would say, for now at least, that's a lot of bark. I would be surprised if there's bite, because I think that would be him playing to where he's weaker.
Mm-hmm. And does there need to be regime change in Syria?
I think at this point the question is who's answering that question. I think if you're in Syria, I think the answer is very strongly for a lot of people, yes, although the question is what comes after it.
Right.
Assad is bad. It's hard not to say that, but what replaces him worse. But then the other question, and this is really testing Trump's coalition, is even if objectively Assad needs to be gotten rid of, is it the U.S.'s job to do so? And does the U.S., given its history in the Middle East over the last decade, do they want to commit to seeing that through, or would that be going back on Trump's campaign promises, and would that be involving us in a quagmire?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the story being that every good possible thing to be done doesn't necessarily need to be done by the United States.
Yeah.
You really have to pick your spots, and I think that's a question that American foreign policy is going to have to ask going forward.
Mm-hmm. Adam, it sounds like a job for Jack Bauer. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, more with Adam Carrington, 46 minutes after the hour. Thanks for being with us this morning. Good morning. It's 48 minutes after the hour on your Monday morning. Hope you had a great weekend. I'm talking to Dr. Adam Carrington from Hillsdale College, professor of politics. And Adam, I got to say, you sound terrific this morning, despite having a little bit of those flu-like symptoms.
I appreciate it. I was telling off air, Paul, that I thought I sounded like a poor man's Alec Baldwin.
You kind of do sound a little bit like that. It's actually very impressive. All right. Speaking of impressive, how about Neil Gorsuch and his credentials? And he's going to become the 113th Justice of the Supreme Court today.
Yes. And that is, and this builds off of, I think we talked a little about this last time, his very impressive confirmation hearings. And it really made it very hard for a really strong effort to not support him to build up. The only real thing that occurred was the attempt to filibuster his nomination, and I think because of how well he did, how impressively he did, it gave Republicans the unity that I don't know that they would have had with a weaker nominee to push through and get rid of the filibuster for Supreme Court nominees to make sure that he got supported. But I really think, by the way, that was a mistake on the part of Democrats. I think they overestimated how unified Republicans are in general. And I think a weaker Supreme Court nominee, which could be maybe the next one that Donald Trump might nominate, could have kept the filibuster in place. They could have actually succeeded. But Gorsuch was, as you said, so impressive that I think it really solidified the Republicans' courage to go forward with it.
Mm-hmm. Adam, we're all sitting in your classroom right now. Maybe you could just give our listeners just a very brief explanation of what the nuclear option is when it comes to a Supreme Court confirmation.
Sure. Sounds foreboding, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
You might be doing a duck and cover drill or something like that after it. No, the nuclear option is basically the Senate has a tradition of wanting to have free and open debate. And being a smaller chamber than the House of Representatives, one way they've done so is to allow people to talk for as long as they want, a senator to talk as long as he wants. In the past, that's been used to end or to sometimes block or delay legislation, what's called a filibuster. If you've ever seen the movie Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, you see Jimmy Stewart's character filibustering by just talking nonstop. Nowadays, the way that a filibuster works, it's sort of been different than it used to be, is basically you can block a bill from going to a vote by refusing to end debate, not merely not stopping talking, but refusing to end debate, because the Senate rules say that to end debate, you have to have 60 votes. 60 votes it takes to end a debate, even though the bill or the issue itself would only take 51. And so it was very clear that the Democrats didn't have 51 votes to vote down Gorsuch, but they had 41 votes to keep debate from ever ending, meaning you could never even vote on him. And what the Republicans did, what was called the nuclear option, was they basically, for the issue of Supreme Court nominees, nothing else, just for that, they voted to remove the filibuster rule, meaning that you can end debate with 51 votes, and then you can vote for the Supreme Court nominee with 51 votes, basically getting rid of the filibuster entirely for that issue.
So, and why did they have the power to do that?
Well, they have the power because unless something is specified in the Constitution, otherwise the Constitution actually says the Senate is allowed to set its own rules. And even though there is a history of having the filibuster as a way to support debate, the argument was it was now doing the opposite. You always have to ask if means continue to serve their end. Mm-hmm. And the means of requiring 60 votes to end a debate was meant to allow people to continue talking. In this instance, and in many instances lately, the filibuster has been used not to extend debate, but to deny a majority of the Senate, and therefore of the American people, the chance to vote up or down on issues that they care about. And so that's why that's the moral argument, and the legal argument is the Senate's always been able to make their own rules, and they can add or eliminate things like the filibuster as they so choose.
Mm-hmm. And then how did the Democrats respond to the Republicans using the nuclear option?
Not well. In fact, one senator even compared it to an actual nuclear bomb. which I think everyone can say is a bit overwrought,
yes,
to say the least.
A little hyperbole there.
Yes, and it is, they made, I think, a legitimate point that there should be mechanisms to protect debate in the Senate, but I think that there were other ways to do so than the way they were using it in this instance. But yes, they've made comments that this will fundamentally change the nature of the Senate, that this will undo what the chamber is meant to be as a deliberative body. I don't quite follow that, just because I think the way the filibuster was being used, again, was part of the problem. It wasn't part of a solution to even the very thing that the Democrats were complaining about.
Now, Adam, it wasn't that long ago, maybe in October, Tim Kaine said that under the assumption that Hillary was going to be the president, that the Democrats were very ready, willing, and able to use the nuclear option to get someone confirmed to the Supreme Court that they wanted. And now they turn around and they're upset with the Republicans.
This is pretty naked partisanship. It really is. And this is where institutional questions about the separation of powers, the powers of the presidency, the powers of the courts, questions about what rules or regulations or laws best would make the House or the Senate run themselves. I always find these even more fascinating sometimes than, you know, bread and butter issues like abortion or same-sex marriage or tax cuts, because there's a very definitive party line on some of those latter things. The former, a lot of times, you can find out who really is committed to what the Constitution says or what or being consistent with themselves based on how well they stick to questions of procedure. Or do they only use them to further their own partisan issues? And I think the way that the Democrats have spoken about this shows a pretty high level of partisanship, not a real concern for the Senate itself.
Mm-hmm. Adam, thank you so much. You're just one of my favorite guests. I just love listening to you, and I appreciate coming on the show with you not even feeling very good this morning.
Oh, it's a pleasure to talk about this and not about the flu, I promise.
Yes, and go Reds.
Thanks. I'll give you a go Twins, too.
Thanks. Have a great day.
You too.
All right. It's 56 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break. We've got lots more Faith Radio Mornings coming up. Thanks for being with us. We love you. Minutes after the hour. Good morning. Bill Arnold here. You know, there is a little competition going on in Washington, D.C., the second annual World Peeps Eating Contest. Those little yellow sponge bunnies that I think are 150% sugar. And some guy stuffed 255 of them in his pie hole in 5 minutes. That is unbelievable. Anyway, I'm going to have a bite of muffin and a sip of coffee and get prepared for hour two of Faith Radio Mornings. So glad you're with us this morning, and thank you so much for being part of our spring share. Be back in a minute.
Thank you for listening to this conversation from Faith Radio Mornings. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Faith Radio Mornings. Also, take a moment to subscribe to this podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player and never miss a show.